Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI COVID Response Community Radio in Central Iowa. I am Ursula Rudenberg, your host for today, together with my co-host Ann Kinzel, joining us via Zoom.
After a gloomy weekend, I'm happy to report a sunny forecast for today and tomorrow. But it is April, after all, so we may see some rain tonight. Tuesday night and Wednesday morning have a 20% chance of snow, which seems ridiculous. Wednesday is predicted to end up sunny. Temperatures should remain cool with nights still dipping into the 20s. However, as the weekend approaches, sunnier weather is predicted with rising temperatures and a high of 66 on Sunday.
And here is Mr. Digital Dennis Hart with a summary of the past week in Iowa news. Dennis?
Thanks very much. I'm happy we're all able to get back together again at this electronic roundtable on this Monday. Of course, the past week's news around Iowa was dominated by the coronavirus, as it has been for quite some time. As the week went on, the death toll from the virus kept climbing, reaching 43 by this Monday afternoon. The number of people infected also went up, reaching 1,710 by today. Governor Kim Reynolds began the week last Monday by closing more businesses and public spaces. Included were malls, pool halls and bowling alleys, libraries, playgrounds, and campgrounds. The reason? They were all gathering spots, in spite of rules that restricted gatherings in an effort to curb the spread of the coronavirus. The governor already had ordered the closure of dine-in restaurants and bars, barbershops, and more, closed schools, and instituted a 10-person limit on public gatherings. Violating any of those orders could lead to a fine and up to 30 days in jail. She still stopped short of issuing a blanket shelter-in-place order. As the number of coronavirus cases continued to go up in Iowa, there was word that more than 20% of those cases involved healthcare workers. And there was word that people over the age of 40 in Iowa are making up about 70% of the state's coronavirus cases, even though they make up less than half the state's population. The Des Moines Register reported that Linn County had the most reported coronavirus cases in the state, and that at least 90 of them could be traced to a nursing home in Cedar Rapids. At Heritage Specialty Care in Cedar Rapids, 60 of those infected individuals were residents, and 14 of those 60 residents had died as of this past Saturday. The other 30 infected people were staff members. The facility has 110 patients and 125 workers. The facility has been walled off from the public, its elderly residents have been segregated, and its staff members have been wearing protective gowns, masks, and goggles. In the wake of all this, came word last week that the state had issued an order allowing healthcare workers to wear expired face masks and gowns, use the same equipment during multiple patient contacts, and reuse single-use equipment. It also authorized healthcare facilities to more quickly discharge coronavirus patients once they stabilize. Meanwhile, last week, the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation suggested that the coronavirus outbreak would peak in Iowa late this month. Governor Reynolds has said that Iowa should have enough hospital beds and ventilators to handle whatever happens. Also last week, word that coronavirus patients admitted to the University of Iowa hospitals and clinics would be asked if they want to take part in a clinical trial for a drug that could treat the disease. The Iowa healthcare system is one of 70 worldwide sites testing an experimental antiviral drug that has shown promise against some other coronaviruses. In another coronavirus-related story, Iowa saw a record number of jobless claims last week. The third week in a row, a record had been set. More than 67,000 state workers filed unemployment claims. Since March 15th, more than 164,000 Iowans have filed jobless claims. It was no better across the nation. Last week, more than 6.5 million people filed for unemployment. And an Iowa State University economist said that the speed of any economic recovery will depend on containing the coronavirus. In connection with all this, the Des Moines Register reported that the state of Iowa might ask companies to pick up the tab for the record number of workers receiving jobless benefits. Iowa Workforce Development Director Beth Townsend said the agency will resume charging companies for jobless claims if the state's trust fund gets too low. Meanwhile, last week, Tyson Foods suspended production in its Columbus Junction pork processing plant after identifying more than 24 cases of the coronavirus among its employees there. Tyson diverted livestock to other pork plants around Iowa. In addition, the National Beef Packing Company suspended cattle slaughtering at its Tama plant last week for a cleaning that was previously scheduled earlier. Health officials do not consider the coronavirus to be a food safety concern because it's a respiratory disease spread mainly through person-to-person contact. At the same time last week, two other major Iowa companies that had earlier sent employees home to keep the virus from spreading announced they would start reopening their factories this week. Winnebago Industries, and Bridgestone both said they would follow guidelines from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention as they resume operations. Winnebago said it would resume production today, Monday, of some specialty vehicles in Forest City and resume production of motorhomes at several of its Iowa plants the week of May 4th. Winnebago employs about 2,000 workers in Iowa. Bridgestone said its Des Moines factory, which is the biggest agricultural tire plant in the world, would resume production today. About 1,400 people are employed at that plant. Also last week, word that Iowa's ethanol industry said it had cut in half what its production plants would normally make because of a decline in travel caused by the coronavirus outbreak. There was also word that Iowa small business owners had filed 14,000 applications for grants totaling $148 million for relief aid needed during the virus outbreak. The applications came through a small business relief program the governor announced 2 weeks ago. $24 million is available for the grant program, far short of what would be needed to meet all the businesses' requests. Grants have been ranging from $5,000 to $25,000. On the education beat last week, the Des Moines Public Schools announced that the district will finish its academic year with online classes. The district closed its schools on March 13th because of the virus outbreak and now has decided not to return to in-person classes. Still in Des Moines, word that the virus pandemic is projected to make an $18 million dent in that city's budget through the loss of sales tax dollars and other revenue streams. To lessen that blow, city officials plan to keep the property tax rate steady after first planning to cut it by 10 to 40 cents, and they may decide to delay city projects. On the police beat, the Des Moines Register reported that law enforcement agencies across the state had made changes to their daily routines to try to limit officers' exposure to the coronavirus. Among other things, officers have been given kits with masks, gloves, and eyewear, and they are trying to keep their distance in an effort to follow social distancing guidelines. And the Register also reported that retail stores have made precautions as well, such things as installing floor decals, instructing customers to walk one way, single file down aisles, installing signs reminding customers to stay 6 feet apart, and even cleaning shopping carts before customers use them. In another story last week, word that a central Iowa prosecutor was drawing criticism for likening efforts to reduce jail populations during the virus outbreak to attorneys trying to use a get-out-of-jail-free card. Peter Blink, an assistant county attorney in Jasper County, posted his comments on Facebook. Iowa's public defender, Jeff Wright, said that lawyers are doing what they believe is in the best interest of their clients and what's in the best interest of society. And while all this was going on, Governor Reynolds signed a proclamation declaring this past Thursday as a day of prayer in the state. She said, in her words, "The power of prayer and faith in God is something that has guided so many of us in good times and bad." There was some non-coronavirus news around the state last week. The trial date for the man accused of killing University of Iowa student Molly Tibbetts was set. Defendant Christian Bahena Rivera will go on trial in Woodbury County on September 29th. Also last week, the Fort Dodge Messenger reported that the Calhoun County Sheriff had been arrested. Sheriff Scott Anderson was reportedly arrested for domestic abuse and assault on persons of a certain occupation. Also last week, authorities identified the woman killed by a hit-and-run driver in Des Moines while she was walking her dog as a Des Moines Area Community College professor. 38-year-old Lauren Rice was walking her dog when she was struck and killed by a pickup truck. The driver, 49-year-old Robert Sassman, tried to flee in the truck, but authorities arrested him and charged him with first-degree murder. Police said Sassman hit Rice intentionally. A few more notes before I go. There was word last week that alcohol sales in Iowa were up 18% last month compared to the same month a year ago. There was also word that travel in and around the state went way down in the past few weeks. That includes passenger traffic at the Des Moines International Airport, on Amtrak, and on the state's roads. But one thing has gone up: speeding. There's been a 40% hike in vehicles going more than 100 miles an hour. And there was word about an Iowa business that has taken steps to make life easier for customers who might be susceptible to the coronavirus. Come and Go announced it was launching on-request, full-service fueling at stations around Iowa, including Ames and Des Moines. Starting today, Monday, customers can call from their cars and request that a Come and Go employee pump their gasoline. The employee will be wearing gloves. Customers who want to pump their own fuel can still do it. As you may remember, full-service fueling at gas stations was once the norm around the nation, but that started disappearing in the 1970s. Now, at Come and Go, it's a throwback to the past in an effort to help us all get through the coronavirus threat we face in the present. And that, my friends, is your summary of another week of highly consequential news from around the state of Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart, planning to return right back here on Friday with word about what makes news in Ames this week. Between now and then, please do your best to stay safe and healthy. And I'll do the same as we all make our way through this together.
Here comes the sun, I say it's all right.
Here comes the sun. According to CNN, at Mount Sinai Hospital in New York City, that song, Here Comes the Sun by the Beatles, is played over the speaker system every time a COVID-19 patient is discharged from the hospital. In our part of the world, as of last night, Story County had 7 positive COVID-19 cases. Boone County had 4. Marshall had 31, Polk 177, Hamilton 2, Hardin 1, and finally Greene County had its first test positive. Josh Dingell is the owner of Big Acai, a fast food place that became noticeable to me early on in the new building built last year on the corner of Sheldon Avenue and Lincoln Way in Ames. Inquisitive, I eventually went in to try to see what they had and was shown hospitality and warmth as well as food by what looked like a student employee who turned out to be the owner. With the onset of our local business community being in crisis, I was even more curious about one of Ames's youngest entrepreneurs starting his business at a time like this. So I stopped by his store this weekend to ask him how he was doing, and here is a recording of our conversation. Now, when you listen to the conversation, you may pick up an odd echo once in a while. To understand this, picture us during the interview sitting at a safe distance from each other in the empty restaurant, using 2 separate microphones and recorders, which were slightly picking each other's audio up from across the room. So, different times, different types of interviews. So here's what I found out about Josh Dingell, one of Ames's newest arrivals on the business scene. And as always, there is a good story. We're sitting at the corner of Sheldon and Lincoln Way, what used to be a room with a lot of tables in it. Right now, all the tables have been cleared away. This is Big Acai.
Yes.
Tell us about Big Acai.
About 3 years ago, Big Acai was established out of a food truck in West Des Moines. It's a superfood cafe. We offer our sorbets, plant and fruit-based bowls, which we call acai bowls. The acai bowls comes with granola and banana and then different types of fruit and different toppings, and they're fully customizable. And then we also do have avocado toast, salads, soups over the wintertime. We also do offer specialty coffee from Morning Bell Coffee down in Main Street. I like to plug them just because they're a local business here.
And the acai part of the name, yeah. Big Acai. Yeah.
So what acai is, it's a sorbet, but actually the berry itself is the highest antibiotic berry in the world, grown in the Amazon rainforest. It can only be found in one place, only grown in one place.
Which country?
Brazil.
And does it grow on a tree?
It actually grows on a palm tree.
On a palm tree?
On a palm tree, 30 feet up. It almost looks like a blueberry, which is pretty cool, but you can only harvest about 20 to 30% of the berry. And you can't really eat it because there's a big pit in it. So essentially they grind that down, and then we get that shipped to California, and then we have a master sorbet maker make that for us, and then we ship that to our cold storage facilities in Ankeny. So the sorbet is actually made in California. It's kind of a California-based idea that we brought back to the Midwest and made our own spin on it. Yep, and then we have four other sorbets, a coconut base, we have a matcha base, a pitaya base, and then a blue magic base, which is coconut, mango, pineapple, and spirulina.
But the business is not a California business. The business started in Des Moines with a food truck.
Essentially, yeah. The person who started it was actually two people, Jake Jenkins. He's a Des Moines resident. He actually moved out to California after high school and then actually worked for an acai company out there, got the idea, and actually brought that back. And then his mom actually helped out, wrote up the business plan, and then actually she quit her job to do this full time, which is pretty cool.
So she quit her job to start a food truck in Des Moines based on acai berry sorbet.
Then it kind of expanded to our first physical location in Ankeny. Then we started our headquarters in West Des Moines Valley Junction about 2 years ago, and then this location's kind of been in the works for about 2.5 years or so. We opened up in September.
So how did you meet?
I am an Iowa State student. I actually just recently graduated in December, marketing major with a minor in entrepreneurship and management. But one of my good friends in Ames, actually, he lived in my same dorm, actually, and he called me up one day, and he's like, hey, I got a business opportunity. Let me tell you about it. I tried the product, and I was sold. And then I got into talking with Jake and Lynette and actually kind of moved them towards the franchising. So I was kind of the reason why they started franchising, and I was actually the first person to own a franchise from them.
Were you looking for a business?
I just thought I was just going to invest. So I would have never thought I wanted to own a business at all. But I was pretty bored with Iowa State's selection on food that they offered. And I tried the product. I was like, this would be great on campus, something that people could and grab and go that's healthy and affordable.
So you were thinking really of investing for something in Des Moines, and then when you ate it, you thought you want to eat this in Ames too.
Essentially, yeah. Yes.
So you created the food you wanted to eat in this town?
Yeah. So what I did is I actually pitched this idea to my parents. That's kind of who I got the funding from. Brought them out here, tried the product, look at actually this facility when it was being built. And funny enough, I actually lived in Union. So it's pretty convenient for me to kind of come down and open up the store. But it was a long process getting my LLC started up. You know, I was the one that was kind of the first person to test the waters of, you know, I think it's going really well.
Now, you've got also a very colorful painting.
We do.
Is this somebody local?
It is actually someone local.
So you've got a bunch of fruit with faces floating around on a purple background.
Yes, yes. It's very unique. And, you know, I plan to have her do another mural over here as well. There's a lot of white space that I still need to kind of do.
And do you still eat the food here?
I eat it every day. I'm not going to lie. I eat an acai bowl every day.
Is the acai sorbet, is it healthy?
It is extremely healthy. It's about 4 times less sugar than ice cream.
But it does have sugar in it.
It has a little bit of sugar in it, but actually a lot of the diabetics can eat it. Something else that's unique about it is it's dairy-free, so that's very hard to find. So we offer a lot of products that people that have dietary needs and can come in and eat.
So you just graduated. How old are you?
I am 23. You know, I'm a college student. My major is marketing.
Okay, so you opened in September. How were you received?
My customers, they would come in, they haven't ever had an Ossiable before, so they would take pictures of it and actually post it on their social media without, you know, really me telling them to do that. So they were kind of doing the marketing themselves. So, I mean, the product itself is, it's very pretty and appealing. It's an item that people kind of see online and are like, ooh, what is that? I want to come in and try it.
Do you feel that the business has taken off?
Definitely. It's been great.
Really?
Mm-hmm, definitely. And I think the reason why it's taken off is because we're really the only people that are offering Ossie in the area.
Would you say that most of the people are students?
I'd say it's half and half now. Most of our target market was going to be like the students in the area. And actually, since we've been open, a lot of the locals have kind of noticed what this place is. And I'd say it's probably 16 to 35-year-olds now. There's a lot of moms in the area that like to come in. But honestly, it's really anyone that's trying to have a healthy lifestyle. Now it's mostly, I think, locals coming in now.
Because there's no students. As a new business owner, you're suddenly finding yourself in the middle of the COVID-19 crisis. What's it been like?
Rough. I had to lay off, actually, all my employees, unfortunately. It's been really rough. In order to keep my store open, I had to let people go, but that's the reason why I pay for insurance. So they're able to apply for unemployment, and that's kind of the best thing I could do right now. You know, hopefully if demand picks up a little bit, I'd like to bring some people back. But for right now, I currently run the place on myself. It's long hours.
So it's a labor issue for you. Financially, what are the realities?
As of right now, you know, we're doing fine. I was giving grants out to small businesses, so we're kind of waiting to hear back on that. But most of my profit that I'm getting right now is going to be towards paying utilities and keeping the lights on my store. But I'll make ends meet, yeah. But, you know, we don't know how long this is going to be, which is a scary thing. Hopefully, people will continue to support local businesses, and that's what, you know, I've been telling a lot of people, support your local businesses. You know, these bigger corporations, they'll be fine. They have money. These small businesses, you know, it's heartbreaking to, you know that most of these businesses won't be coming back because of what's happening. But
you want to stay?
I do. Mm-hmm. Yep. I want to support the community as much as I possibly can.
How has the amount of your business changed? Have you seen a big reduction? And
huge reduction.
Can you give us a...
I'd say about 75%.
75%.
At least a 75% reduction, yeah, in what we're doing right now out of the store. But, you know, I, you know, don't like to think of that right now. You know, I'm just trying to come in here and make people happy. If I'm open, you're making people happy and smile and able to supply a healthy product, then, you know, we'll be okay.
Yeah. Has the crisis affected your supply chain?
Right now, no. Luckily, I had placed an order a couple weeks ago, so I have enough supply to last me for a couple months. But I don't know what it's going to look like, you know, in the next month or so. But, you know, I'll be fine right now. You know, I stocked up. I was lucky. Some of my other business partners didn't, so they're seeing a little increase of what they're paying for their Ossie tubs. But, you know, I think what we can do is maybe eat that money right now. I don't want to change the price on what we're offering because, you know, at the end of the day, we're trying to offer a product that is affordable, that people can come in multiple times a week instead of charging a lot of money where you see out in the West Coast. I mean, our product is probably half the price out there. I think everyone's going through what we're going through. I think as long as we stick together and, you know, we'll be okay.
So you plan to stay in Ames?
I do plan on having some type of residency in Ames, but I plan on to expand this business outside of Iowa itself.
Really work on the franchise.
Exactly. I am working on other businesses right now. One business I am trying to start, a coffee business, actually. I was actually in Uganda, Africa, with Iowa State in November with Kino Soul, which is a startup actually through Iowa State. They made a dehydration system using solar power, which is pretty cool. So we started a microfinance company with Iowa State, which is pretty cool. And then I actually met to a non-for-profit organization that does their own coffee, and they actually outsource with locals out there. So I've been in contact with them for 3 or 4 months or so. We've gotten some beans sent in here. So it's kind of a testing phase right now, what we're doing. But in hopes maybe a year and a half or so, I'll have my own coffee brand and, you know, having a story behind this brand, explaining to people, hey, if you're supporting this brand, you're supporting communities back in these very poor places.
So you're putting your education to work, your entrepreneurial education, right?
I am. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it sounds like you also have a philosophy. Can you describe a little bit what is your vision?
So I kind of want to help people first. Being that I've been to a third world country, to Uganda, I've seen what they have compared to what we have here. It was a huge culture shock.
Why were you in Uganda?
It was a social entrepreneurship class with Iowa State. That was kind of a first of its kind at Iowa State that they offered, and Kino Soul kind of sponsored the whole thing.
And Kino Soul is?
Kino Soul is a non-for-profit company established for a couple years or now. Started from Iowa State that made dehydration systems for very, very, very poor communities out there. It's probably the cheapest and accessible dehydration system you can make that's affordable for kind of people over there. So it uses different types of plastics that could be shipped overseas really easily. This is in Uganda, yeah. So big hunger problem. Food waste is another big problem. They're teaching people, hey, you can dehydrate your food waste instead of throwing it away. So people back in the United States could purchase a dehydration system, and then it's sent over. They're actually being donated and then implemented and used in areas that need product. So Kino Soul sponsored an Iowa State class, which I was in. It's actually the first group of students to kind of go show how to use the product. It's a social entrepreneurship class, so you learn about social entrepreneurship.
So what exactly is a social entrepreneur?
A social entrepreneur is someone that doesn't do something for money. So they're doing it for a greater good. And the Chinese have moved in there, and they've done a lot of infrastructural stuff, but they're not really helping the community and, you know, the economy there. They're there to just make money. And that's what, you know, I want to talk about is invest in these third world countries because they really need our help.
Experience in Uganda affected how you want to build businesses in the United States. How does that translate for you?
I think it's influenced my drive. Being in a third world country, these people will work 100 times harder over there. I mean, hard work really brings you to where you want to be. I really listen. You know, I talk to my customers. I do love what I do. Making money is like one of my last things. I want people to know that there's more healthy options. I call this healthy fast food. There isn't really a name for it.
So let me ask one more COVID-19 question. People always wonder about how do you guarantee that when somebody buys food here that it is safe?
Yeah, so I don't think people should be afraid to come in and buy food. It's more of pick your place. The first thing is having a facility that has less workers in it. I'm quarantining myself. I limit interactions that I have with people, making sure everything's sanitized at night, making sure if someone touches a point of sale, it's clean every time. When you're taking someone's order, using a new set of gloves each time. You know, Mondays, I close down the facility to deep clean, make sure I go over everything. And, you know, I deep clean every night, but it's just an extra precaution. You know, I try to tell people, hey, limit the amount of, you know, cash you're using because cash can spread the virus really easy. Striving to have online orders. I mean, that's a big thing is having online ordering.
Did you ever imagine that running a business would be like this?
No, not at all. I would have never thought I would have to lay off all my employees. You know, I have to, you know, say thanks to the people in the community. They're like, I'm going to continue to, you know, keep supporting you. You know, I appreciate you guys, you know, staying open. And, you know, I tell them the same. Like, you know, I want to appreciate you coming in and interviewing me. I want to say everyone stay safe out there.
Okay, thank you.
We were sipping by the beach, eating acai. Resolution is bad religion, that's specific.
Keith Morgan, Story County Emergency Coordinator, has joined us now. Thank you for joining us, Keith.
Good morning. How's it going?
Okay, good to have your voice with us. So, Keith, let's talk a little bit about emergency coordination in the time of COVID-19. One of the questions I was kind of trying to picture and thinking about the work you do. It is springtime. We're heading into flood season, tornado season. And these are times usually when people have to gather together to do emergency rescue operations. How do you visualize this at a time like this when people really can't gather? Are you having to make special provisions to kind of anticipate awkward or difficult, dangerous situations?
If you're referring to a response to a disaster or something like that, emergency management isn't yes or no. It's much more balancing different kinds of risk and the benefits that would come from them. So if we should have a large scale, something like a tornado, high winds that would require a response where the first responders would have to be close by each other, it would be left up to the incident commander, but I am fairly certain that those immediate needs would be the top priority and that they would respond utilizing whatever protective equipment that they might have at that time or they feel is necessary, but they would go for those priorities, which we always go by three basic priorities. And the first is always life safety. So if we can rescue people and get them out of a dangerous situation without endangering more people, that would be the focus. So I would envision that they would go ahead and respond, and then we would deal with any of the potential chances for a COVID infection after that.
What does that mean, deal with it afterwards? Because the infection happens, at the time. So you're saying that if you would just kind of take the risk that somebody would get sick and then deal with the illness later on?
It would be, again, up to the incident commander. If personal protective equipment was available, then they would utilize it. But if somebody is going to die without a response, that balanced against the possibility that somebody might get COVID-19, it would be up to the incident commander on scene. But I'm fairly confident that our first responders would go ahead and respond to take care of those situations where immediate life was at risk.
Speaking of personal protective equipment, Keith, what's the situation with the people that you work with in emergency response in Story County?
As you know, personal protective equipment is in high demand and low quantities of it. We are implementing the directives that have been put out by Iowa Department of Public Health with respect to extending the life or utilizing stuff that may have gone beyond its shelf life in there. And our office's main part of that is to work with public health. Public health is our lead agency on this. They've got the connections down into the different people that utilize the PPE, the personal protective equipment. And we're making sure that they're aware of the adjustments to how they can utilize the equipment longer, and so that they understand what that means and how they can use it. Again, we're balancing the risk of running out with the risk of utilizing the equipment in ways that were not previously allowed.
Keith, I'm going to figure that you've been in emergency management for some time. How does that make you feel as an emergency management professional that should be asked to reuse equipment or use it past its due date?
It goes back to what I said before, that it is risk management on everything that we do. There is no scene, there's no response to an emergency that is going to be cut and dry most of the time. There is going to always be a balance between the benefits that might be gained dealing with imperfect and incomplete information. But decisions have to be made. The decisions have been made by the IDPH, which has got the authorities and the roles to do this sort of stuff and a lot more information than I have on it. So once those decisions are made, We look at how we can implement them in a way that is, again, protecting our first responders, accomplishing a mission that we have to do out there, and trying to balance the risk as best as possible. At each level, all the way from the person that is the healthcare responder on up to the federal level, people are making decisions, and we have to rely on those people to make the right decisions.
So at this time, Keith, what are you focusing on?
We've walked through quite a few different things already. When this first, we had discussions in February and March about this. Towards the end of March, we started looking at what would happen should we have our first case of it. Well, we've gone well beyond that. So now what we are doing is we're monitoring the overall progression of this. We're looking at some of the models to try and see if what we are doing will match what is predicted to be the curve on this. We began by looking at our essential workers. And one of the first things that came up was childcare with the schools closing and everything. And we worked through that to try and find some different resources, maybe shift some of these resources of people that students that would normally be in school to see if they could help out our essential personnel when it comes to the childcare issue. We seem to be doing okay with that. We're not hearing of large numbers of essential workers not being able to work because they're concerned about their children not having proper supervision. Another area was, and you've seen it down in Des Moines, was some of our wastewater and water workers. They are actually in very specialized knowledge. Each community has their own systems. So we made sure that we could share those resources better. Been collaborating amongst the different cities, trying to set up opportunities for them to discuss amongst themselves simple things like should we close down the playground equipment and like that so that they can gain from each other's insights on that. Been working with Ames Chamber of Commerce about some of these programs to help keep our businesses going or help them survive this very difficult times. And they've got on their website www.ameschamber.com/news/COVID-19-resources information to help these businesses, these programs that are out there. Been working with United Way of Story County, both looking at the food banks, helping out some of these school feeding programs. And also they've gathered up quite a bit of information. Go to their website and there's a COVID-19 link there so that again we can keep our food pantries going, and there's other good information there for just the normal resident to be able to gain information from. And we continue to monitor things and work with our medical providers to see where we're at and if there are any overriding needs that need to be taken care of.
Keith, we haven't reached the predicted peak yet, and if we do, there's always the possibility that the hospital would exceed its capacity to provide for patients. What is the plan for that?
What we're looking at is we've had discussions with Mary Greeley, and one of the first things is to find out who would be able to take responsibility for off-site medical care. It's actually a fairly big issue to do something like that. Additionally,
so what's the plan?
We have a trailer that has got equipment. We've been calculating where we would be putting this, and we're looking at different facilities at this time. But we've got a mass care trailer that would allow us to set up approximately 70 some cots outside. We've calculated what would be the maximum number of folks that we think we are looking at if we have to exceed that, how we're going to get extra cots, which we have.
Keith, when you say cots outside, are you saying that cots are outside the hospital or outside in the outdoors?
Outside of the hospital.
Oh, okay.
Because you move into a whole different realm when you start moving medical care outside of a facility. The first phase of this planning was to work with Mary Greeley as our primary care facility and to look and see how much they could surge their capacity within the hospital.
And, so is it fair to say that the plans are complete, or are they still in progress?
They're still in progress. They always will be in progress as we shift and adapt to what we have for resources that are going to be available. Previously, if we'd done this planning 2 weeks ago, there would have been a lot more from the national stockpiles that are available. We're also reaching out to down to the state. They do have teams that go around and help with this planning. But right now, that planning is focused where it's needed most, which is out in Linn County and Johnson County, where they have a much higher rate.
Since we're in the communication business here at KHOI, if this situation were to come to fruition, how would this be communicated to the public?
When you say how would this be communicated, what
exactly? Let's say that, you know, Mary Greeley's capacity reaches near peak and cots would have to be put in some other place. How would the public learn about this? What's the procedure to let them know that capacity is reaching its finite limit?
I'll be completely honest with you. That is not something that we would be focusing on letting the public know about, not that we would hide it. It's just that our efforts would be on communications with the Regional Medical Coordination Center and those people that need to be notified in order to create the additional capacity. Communications is designed to, in our world, is to try and facilitate the changes that need to happen. If we needed the public's assistance in part of this, that's when we would shift our focus to communicating that need to the public. But if you're asking, would we immediately communicate or put that information out to the public, that wouldn't be a first priority of ours. Our priority would be to develop the capacity to be able to absorb that, because that communications needs to be focused on getting the resources to where it needs to go. And the public is not going to really be able to assist us that much in that particular endeavor.
Keith, I apologize for cutting you short, but we are running out of time. Any final thoughts before we have to turn into pumpkins here?
Just what you hear all the time, though, is this is not over. You hear about things getting better out in New York and like that. Continue the efforts. Listen to the guidance that's being put out there, and do your best to be a part of the solution to this overall situation.
Yeah, we're still headed into the upswing, right?
Still monitoring it. We look at the data every day to try and see where we're at.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you, Keith, and apologize for cutting you short. We've been listening to Keith Morgan, Community Story County Emergency Management Coordinator.
Did you know that a songbird with a beautiful voice has come to Iowa from New York City, and they are nesting above the Pantorium entrance of KHOI? Their story of coming to Iowa is unique to only a few species. In the first part of the 20th century, house finches were trapped in California and transported to the East Coast to be sold in pet stores. People love their singing. However, this is a violation of the Migratory Bird Treaty Act of 1918. New York pet shop owners, who had been selling the finches illegally, released their birds in 1940 to escape prosecution. The finches survived and began to colonize the New York suburbs. By 50 years later, they had advanced halfway across the continent, meeting their western kin on the Great Plains. There has also been an eastern migration of these birds from California, as they have acclimated to urban and suburban habitat. It has been a migrator from both coasts, but it has received a warmer reception than other arrivals, like the European starling and the house sparrows. The house finch acceptance is partly due to the cheerful red head and breasts of the male and to the bird's long, twittering song, which can now be heard in most of the neighborhoods of the continent. If you haven't seen one recently, chances are you can find one at the next bird feeder you come across. They especially like sunflower seeds and will come to hummingbird feeders for sugar water. House finches are small body finches the size of our state bird, the American goldfinch. And adult males are rosy red around the face and upper breast with streaky brown back, belly, and tail. In flight, the red rump is conspicuous. Adult females are not red. They are plain grayish brown with thick, blurry streaks and an indistinctly marked face to aid in camouflaging at the nest. They are gregarious birds that collect at feeders or perched high in nearby trees. When they're not at feeders, they feed on the ground, on weed stalks, or in the trees. House finches frequent city parks, backyards, urban centers, farms, and forest edges across the continent. The pairs begin to form within flocks in winter, and some paired birds may remain together all year. In breeding season, males perform a flight song display, singing while fluttering up with slow wing beats and then gliding back down. The male feeds the female during courtship and incubation, and the females also sing during the spring. They nest upon a wide variety of sites. Their nests average about 12 to 15 feet above the ground. Sometimes they use sites such as cavities, hanging planters, old nests of other birds. Both parents will feed the nestlings, and they have up to 3 broods per year. Adaptable, colorful, and cheery-voiced, house finches are common from coast to coast today, and they have joined us at the Pantorium nesting on an outside speaker here at the station. This is Pat Schlarbaum with KHOI Community Radio.
It's Anna Banana with KHOI's Heart to Heart Messages to connect you to love, comfort, and your community. Today's Heart to Heart Messages are brought to you by an individual who is a wife, mother, artist, DJ, teacher, citizen, and community advocate, all rolled up in one. She wanted to honor our Ames Police Department, including all the staff and the first responders, Iowa State University Police, Ames Fire Department, and the paramedics at Mary Greeley. So KHOI, we have a lot of messages packed into this one segment, so let's get started. Stephanie Johnson Based requested that this heart-to-heart message be read to you. My husband works for the IT department at the city of Ames, and he noted the other day that he saw some chalk drawings on the ground as he walked into the city hall. Local chalk drawings on the ground next to the police station, thanking our officers and staff for everything they do for our community and for keeping us safe. I appreciate these children who had the foresight to understand the importance of this small gesture. Not only were they showing appreciation for these individuals, but they also learned a valuable lesson about giving back. Giving back and gratitude right now is a good lesson to learn with the situation we find ourselves, in particular for the younger generation. Our police force, fire department, and ambulance from Mary Greeley put their lives on the line for each and every one of us. They do it with the knowledge that they are putting themselves potentially in harm's way each and every day, yet they do it anyway. To be honest, each of these individuals do this knowing they may need their families due to the nature of their jobs. I am so grateful for having these individuals that make me feel safe every day. I feel a sense of calm knowing my family can be at ease here in Ames because of their love and dedication to their jobs and for the care to the citizens of our great town. To our police department, Iowa State Police, thank you for all you do. To our fire department, thank you for your service and for putting yourself on the line each and every day. To our paramedics, thank you for the work we do every day also to save lives while exhibiting a humbleness that is truly heartwarming. We are so fortunate to live in Ames, Iowa. So after sharing what KHOI is doing with these heart-to-heart messages with the Ames Commander Jason Hubble, Stephanie also described the phone conversation with Commander Tuttle as follows. Commander Tuttle discussed the stress level of the and its effort not only to keep the community safe, but also our officers, because if they were to get sick, it would be detrimental to the city. And so every effort is like our safety in these times. The goal of the police department is to see the brightness spirit of the city, the massive changes with the current school environment
on uncertainties and the unknown due to COVID-19. Commander Tuttle is personally grateful to work in a community that supports everyone in the police department on a daily basis. He is grateful to work in Ames because not all communities have support from citizens that you see in Ames. He's grateful for the snacks and treats received in the department by local members of the community. It is important for the police department to maintain connections with our community. The police force has worked to creatively keep the community connected through outreach, such as the book readings. Although different than before, they are still maintaining their outreach efforts during this time. The goal is to understand how the children are feeling and help them as the police department isn't able to reach out to this group as much due to social distancing. This is why the police are doing Facebook posts and social media to promote their new program to have officers read books to children via video. The book readings were created to keep relationships with children while social distancing. In the past, they were able to interact or hand out stickers, which of course they can't right now. Commander Tuttle said wonderful things about all the staff of the police in helping build bridges and maintain relationships, particularly in this new environment. You can access our web Facebook page, which is updated typically on a daily basis, whether it be the book readings or information for older students or adults related to local events, happenings, or updates on COVID. He thanked the community again for their donations of goodies and treats. Stephanie especially wanted Anna Bonanda to make sure to tell everyone that Commander Tuttle wanted you to know that, like her husband, he was humbled and was so very happy when he saw the chalk drawing of love and support for the police department. The local family came and drew in front of the entrance. So thank you, Stephanie, for sharing your message and conversation with us today. Also, I want you to know, Anna Banana wants you to know, that Stephanie emailed me that she was planning on bringing the department her homemade banana bread to thank the officers for all that they are doing. Well, Anna Banana is certainly appreciative and supportive of that kind of delicious act of kindness. So I also hope that one of the most deserving bread is Julie Sachs. Department. Julie describes her position with the Ames Police Department as a liaison between law enforcement, consumers, and providers working to help educate, provide services for those struggling with a variety of mental health issues and concerns. Julie's work has been described as empathetic and adaptive because she works to meet the needs of each individual and promotes mental health awareness to attempt to change the social stigma attached to asking for help. Julie dedicates much of her time to advocating for families in Ames and surrounding areas by supporting others to be self-sufficient, educated, and emotionally healthy, which is more needed more than ever during this time of COVID-19, I would say. So Julie sent this heart-to-heart message to us. Heartfelt thanks to medical staff, social workers, therapists, counselors, EMS, fire, police, teachers, grocery store, and essential business staff that are still working to make sure that we have what we need. May you all know how very much you are appreciated, thought, and prayed for. May we never take for granted the helpers, for they are our backbone, safety net, protection, and lifetime. Hope and fear cannot occupy the same space. Invite one to stay. A quote by Maya Angelou. So thank you, Julie, Commander Tuttle, for the heartfelt messages that have shared heartfelt expressions of gratitude for those who protect and serve our community. And I should also add that it's my understanding that the community outreach officer, Kurt Kruger, will be hosting a live show on KHOI where he will be reading to children for a half hour starting at noon on Friday. So how exciting and wonderful is that? And also, the library is doing a children's program on Wednesdays at noon. And I think Anna Banana gives a shout out for supporting our children in the community during this time to the library and to the police department for doing this wonderful programming. So be sure to stay tuned for more details about this new and exciting KHOI programs. So if you would like to respond to any of these messages, I invite you to text me, Anna Banana, at 515-809-0077. It's a Monday. I need more coffee, so sorry about that. Anna Banana needs more bananas and coffee. But if you have a heart-to-heart message you would like to read on air by me, you can not only text me at 515-809-0077, or again, you can email me at khoiradio@gmail.com and put heart to heart in the subject line, please. All of us at KHOI hope that our heart to heart messages inspire you to connect to our community and send from the bottom of our hearts a thank you for listening and sending out our love to each of you. So Ursula, am I right in that those two programming for children are scheduled for Wednesday and Friday, right?
That's right. And we look forward to introducing these programs and in broadening what KHOI offers the community. And thank you so much, Anna. And this has been Local Talk. I've been one of your hosts, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for listening today.
And I've been your other host, Ann Kinzel. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. here on KHOI at 89.1 FM. Also remember that you can hear a recording of this show online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard on the program. Also remember that KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org. Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. We also heard Here Comes the Sun by the Beatles and Eating Acai by Johnny Badluck.
And remember that you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. In the absence of our regular spring funding campaign, we ask that you consider donating to support KHOI at khoifm.org. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.